Welcome back to After the Buzzer. I am Gordy Jones, and Mike Gross is on location in Hershey, Pennsylvania for the various state finals. So how are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Happy to be, this is always a fun weekend.
Yes.
And we're just getting started with it, yeah.
So we have a very special guest, and that would be Mike Jensen, late of the Philadelphia Inquirer, after 35 years there. He has retired from that position and is now working on a book about Philadelphia hoops, and there's no better person for that job. And also was recently named the winner of the USBWA's Jim O'Connell Award for Excellence in Beat Reporting. So welcome, Mike Jensen.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gordy. And good to hear your voice, Mike.
Yeah, you got it. You know, we should point out also that our own Gordy Jones just won an award from the Pro Basketball Writers Association for a story about the Sixers. And finally, let me point out that I didn't win shit.
So the pod will turn into a little therapy session, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
No bitterness
whatsoever. Well, thanks for mentioning that. But as I said to Mike Jensen the other day, something like this is not the reason any of us do this. But at the same time, it was nice to be recognized, and I was really happy about it. So it really humbled me and heartened me. So that was really nice, and I'm sure that's how Mike Jensen regards his award. So Mike, I just wonder, we wanted to talk about the NCAAs, which begin in earnest today. And I wonder, how weird is it for you not to be working this week of all weeks?
You know, people have said you really miss it, and I answered with explicit no. this was during the conference tournaments, and it was like, I was still watching, and then I could turn off and go to bed, so without thinking of a lead. So no, I was ready for this and doing other things, and I'm still writing every day. But as far as, you know, do I miss the, I enjoyed the deadline adrenaline. I truly did like writing out deadline, but it did not faze me not to have to do that anymore and just watch, honestly. So, you know, and it was, especially when you're basically writing a funeral every day, and Jeff Nyberg replaced me, and he worked so much harder than I would have been working this year. He did Drexel out down in D.C. He got there for the quarterfinal of the CAA, and then he was in Brooklyn for LaSalle out, and then got over to Manhattan, Villanova out. Penn didn't give him a chance to get out, but then it was St. Joe's out. Mm-hmm. So it was each of that, you're winding up seasons, you know, in the middle of the night often. And it's an interesting experience when we have, you know, these six Division I teams in Philadelphia, and he was keeping track of the women's programs too.
It's funny, Mike. This had to be, this year to me was the biggest bubble in the history of the tournament, and I don't know how many of those six teams were even on it.
The answer is none. I mean, Villanova was on it going to New York. You know, if we're talking Philly on the men's side, but they had to win at least a couple, and as it turned out, that wouldn't have been enough. You're right, because there were so many bid stealers that the bubble just evaporated before our eyes, before the Big East size, right? Because, you know, Villanova was behind Seton Hall, St. John's, and Providence, and none of them even got in. Mm-hmm. So I looked at it and said, because my point on that was, you know, I give my thoughts now 140 characters at a time, I guess, on Twitter. and my point on that is, I watch Big East basketball, and after UConn was very good, Marquette was good, Creighton was good, I mean, real good teams, you know, and are seeded accordingly. But the rest of it, I was like, I don't know, I watched a lot of A-10, and I watched the rest of the Big East, and Villanova wasn't better than St. Joe's. You know, St. Joe's hit some struggles during the year, but as far as talent levels, and sure enough, you know, St. Joe's and Seton Hall went to overtime in the NIT, and Seton Hall was really trying to win the basketball game. They hadn't given up on their season. Here we are.
Now, this is the second straight year, Mike, that there are no Philly teams in the NCAAs. Is that a blip, or is there something deeper behind that?
Well, and let's put it this way. It had been since, let me think, Penn in 2016 and Temple dumps last year, whatever that was. They got the Dayton. Mm-hmm. Since a non-Villanova team. Mm-hmm. Had made the tournament. So, you know, Villanova was hiding. So this is, no, it's not a blip. The Big Five has some real problems. Mm. And so now we throw Villanova onto the pile of they've got problems. Mm-hmm. And their problems are more easily fixed in this age of NIL. They are, you know, a member of the Power Five, Power Six. They're not automatically losing players, but I mean, Penn had a terrific freshman this year, and Perkins, the guard, and he's in the portal, you know. Mm-hmm. And if anyone, you know, I think Penn and the Ivy League thought they were immune to such transfer issues. Mm-hmm. We've got the value of an Ivy League education. Well, I mean, when that kid ends up at Georgetown or UVA or somewhere, he's from Landon, Virginia. You know, they have valuable degrees too, and plus he's getting paid NIL, you know, Power Six money, and that's the world we live in. So, you know, here we are. LaSalle has four starters in the portal.
Wow.
Two of them were a 3-year starter, a 4-year starter. Their guards were very good, and they've done their time there, and we'll see. And somebody texted me that Brick is from Coachville, really good guard.
Yep. No.
Yeah, 5'8", but just pound for pound, as good a player as there was in the Big Five. Mm-hmm. And somebody texted me that supposedly he might have backup point guard, like $100K value on the NIL. Now, whether you end up collecting that, who knows? But at, you know, the school that was mentioned is a football powerhouse, so mm-hmm. there is that money out there. And what are you going to do? You know, now these programs. You know, I'm thinking Delaware lost their leading scorer.
Yeah,
they just have to accept the fact that they are minor leagues for the Browns if they don't
That's
have it.
Right. Yeah.
St.
Really
Joe's
thinking that. Yeah.
St. Joe's got some, you know, a nice NIL check when a couple of their big boosters found out what Villanova was putting out.
Hmm.
They open their own checkbooks, and we'll see St. Joe's. If they can keep all their players, because they have a talented group.
Interesting.
Bear in mind that Mike is not reporting anymore, but he's still reporting.
Sure. No. It's my heart is still beating. So Pat Gallen is a terrific CBS guy. So I mean, I was at Drexel women's practice this week. He's like, I thought you were tired. I was like, I didn't die. And there was actually a book reason to be there. I mean, I'm only at places where there's a reason to be there for my own purposes, which still Twitter doesn't count. Mm-hmm. Not just showing up just to Twitter to show up.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So.
Well, the NIL stuff is. I didn't really think about this until just now when you were saying it, but it might mean the end of schools like St. Joe's or LaSalle or even, you know, like a St. Bonaventure, the teams in the Metro Atlantic. I mean, are they done, or are they absolutely, as you just said, now minor leagues for the Power Six, whatever?
Well, they're not done in the sense that they're competing against each other. They're not competing against, you know,
That's
Texas
true.
A&M. They don't have to beat Georgia. They have to beat each other. And as we speak here, Duquesne just beat BYU, and it's you know, has moved into the second round of the tournament. So they're still, after finishing sixth in the A-10. So there's still just enough there that you can keep guys and get a couple of NIL deals and a couple of transfer portal guys of your own. You know, everyone can't play, you know, for North Carolina. So they're not dead. They're not dead. And, you know, they just need the lightning strike, because it could have been VCU. They just beat Villanova last night. It could have been St. Joe's. Instead, it was Duquesne that did not finish in the top four of the A-10, but is still alive in the top 32 of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Do you think Dunphy sticks around? Is he still coaching?
You know, I have made it my business for 35 years to not predict what's inside the brain of Fran Dunphy. any logical guess, I would almost bet against myself. And you know, the Costanza theory would work better than the logic theory. And when it comes to basketball, I mean, I'll say right now, he's the best coach in the Big Five. And right now, this current group. But I still would have guessed all these people in the portal. I thought, well, that means Fran's probably retiring. Well, the tea leaves I'm hearing the last couple of days are, no, he's probably not retiring. He's at high school games. And my response was, well, he'd be at high school games anyway. He'd never be retiring. That's Fran. But I take it at complete face value when he said, I'm going to do the best thing for LaSalle. I completely, that's what he intends to do. And he wouldn't want to leave somebody in the lurch starting out. On the other hand, you know, if they're starting over, you know, and he's over 70 years old, I really thought that, okay, this would be it. But, you know, and maybe one more is it. I mean, they had a better season, you know, even finishing whatever they were, a game under 500, whatever they were. That was still a high watermark, and he's losing his two veteran guards who had really good seasons in Briggs and Brantley. Now, that said, those guys going in the portal, you can enter the portal, and then you can find out what the market is. And if the market's to your liking, you're gone. Or you can return. You know, that happens. In fact, one of those guys in the portal this year did the same thing last year and then found out, Shepherd, one of the forwards, found out there wasn't such a market, I guess, and he came back and had a pretty good season for LaSalle. Now, maybe this year, that hence there'll be a little better market, and he'll go somewhere. But there's, you know, the other thing you hear about NIL is you hear about all this money, including the rumor I threw out there. Then you find out, well, maybe it's not as much. Maybe it's 50 cents on the dollar for everything you hear. And maybe everyone who gets promised a certain amount to, you know, a certain trouble collecting in the end. So it's a crazy world out there.
Mike, regarding the NCAA tournament, it would seem that right now, today, or this year, that the women's tournament is more compelling just from the standpoint of Caitlin Clark, and maybe on the other side because of the one-and-done thing where you really don't get the attachment that you once did to some of the guys on the men's side. So is this just a blip that once Caitlin is gone, because this is her last year, that we revert, or is this kind of a sign of things to come?
No, and I think that's been true in the last couple of years for me personally. I mean, she's a phenomenon, so that's taking it to its highest level. So I think everything you said is true, but here's South Carolina that graduated all their people, but they've got more people. They're the undefeated team. Caitlin, you got Hannah Hidalgo and Juju Watkins out of USC. Hannah Hidalgo's from South Jersey and is at Notre Dame. You know, led the country in steals as a freshman while scoring 20 a game. And she's not going anywhere. So I don't think it's a new phenomenon. Locally, parochially, last year, Maddie Sechrist was the big story in Philly before she went to the WNBA. So I think there is a lot of that, and I completely agree with you. That's the other side. There is no more, you know, Grant Hill.
Right.
You know, I mean, Shaq played, what, 3 years of college ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all gone. And in fact, it's likely to go the other direction where they won't be in college even for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even now they've got choices. You got Overtime Elite, you got the G League Select Team. You can go mm-hmm. to New Zealand. You can go anywhere in the world
mm-hmm.
And play. On the other hand, now with NIL, I believe NIL, what it does do is allows people to stay in college longer on the men's side.
Yeah.
So that, including get degrees. I'm not anti-NIL in that respect and in the respect that, you know, the coach is getting a bonus for playing in the NIT, maybe playing, you know, postseason.
Mm-hmm.
The players should be paid, and now they are. So what I am against and what I have been against is the instant eligibility of the transfer. I think the 1 year sitting out was helpful, and you could say, well, you don't have to sit out when you transfer as a non-athlete.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that there are all these unintended consequences, and, you know, you're the seventh man as a freshman, and you think, I'm going to start next year. It's like, not so fast, son. we just brought in a free agent, and not only are you not starting, you might be departing.
Right.
There's you know, no loyalty from the school point. So it's a crazy landscape.
It makes
there for a moment, Mike. Nice job.
Yeah, that's right. I think I can name like less than five men's players, like Zach Edey, Kyle Filipowski, Armando Bacot, and I think the guy who transferred from North Carolina to Arizona, what is that, Caleb Love? But I think that's a sign of where we're at. You really can't identify with any of these guys.
Yeah, I could not have named, if you gave me all the last names of the first team All-American team, I couldn't have given you all the first names to your point.
Yeah.
And nor could I have necessarily matched up all the schools. While on the women's side, Caitlin Clark built it up, mm-hmm. but Juju's going to be this star, and Hannah Dago's going to be this star, and it's going to go for a while. Paige at UConn, you know, made first team All-American, but mm-hmm. she had a couple tough years, and she was the original. She was, I'm pretty sure she and Caitlin were the same class coming in, and she was the star coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was number one coming out of high school. Yeah, you're right.
And she got hurt, and both you and I, Gordy, were playing up the Wright Thompson piece, that he just epic piece on.
Oh my gosh!
ESPN.com, and how, I mean, her goal. She might not have ended up going to UConn, but it made it clear she wanted to be recruited by
mm-hmm.
UConn.
And she wasn't.
And Gino wasn't in the gym, but there was a reason, because he had this girl named Paige.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that they couldn't have played together, but they both always had the ball in their hands. So it made sense. And I don't, even as I say, hey, NIL, will keep people around a little longer, and in fact, it already has. It did. It will. It's not going to keep it for 4 years, because when the NBA, it will keep you from going overseas. It will keep you from going to the G League. Mm-hmm. There's so much more money than that. But when the NBA says it's time, then it's time. That's not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you get hurt, NIL's not going to, you know, save you. And as you get older, they're going to get less interested in you.
Right.
Another thing that's happened in the women's game, and this is, I think, direct result of everything we've just been talking about, but it's not something you would have anticipated. I think the biggest personalities among coaches are now on the women's side.
Yes.
Which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And personalities, and also rivalries, grudges,
yeah.
all the rest. And that's been going on, you know. Pat and Gino didn't love each other. Gino and Muffet certainly didn't love each other. But now you see it front center. You see Kim's pretty crazy down at LSU.
She seems a little nuts, you know?
Yeah, Dawn's outspoken. Sometimes she is, you know, I mean, she is, she learned lessons well from John, often Cheney. And we're so close in that, in the one sense, she's very logical. And like when they had the fight between the two teams, she said all the right things afterwards.
Yes,
said
she did.
It happened, but then other times she will in complete defense of her players or other players, she'll be very outspoken. I find her fascinating to where she's coming from, and won't necessarily be say things that are predictable. And again, that adds to it. Gino's always added to it by being himself, by being the outspoken and at times outrageous, you know, Philly guy, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it almost reminds me of the way the Big Eights used to be.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's really good.
That's kind of how.
And they're really, and you're right, because it's too buttoned down now. And it's funny, because one year, I remember Dan Wetzel did, I may have said this on there, I've said it a number of times, I can't remember where I've said it, but at one time, Dan Wetzel did a column on the 5 funniest coaches in college basketball, and he probably mentioned Cheney from Philly, but he was mentioning, and it was Bob Knight who, you know, we know he had that side of him, and it was Katie. And there were a couple of other people, and I was like, we got 5 funnier people than that in Philly. I mean, it was Cheney, it was Martelli, it was Bruiser, and it was Jay at that point was Villanova, and if I mentioned 2 Division II coaches that you didn't know, but you know Dave Pauly, the University of Sciences, Herb at that point, Philly U, it was, we were blessed here, but now everything is sort of buttoned down. And even in Philly, the women's coaches are a little more established and are a little more communicative than the guys' coaches in Philly, which is also interesting. I don't know if it's just sign of the times all over and everyone's careful on the men's side. I don't know.
But to both of your points, I mean, yesterday we had this unintentional juxtaposition of why the women's game is so interesting. We had that Wright Thompson piece you referenced, which had to be like 10,000 words about Caitlin. And then on the other side, we had Drew McGarry writing for sfgate.com about Kim, where he out and out called her an asshole, Kim Mulkey, the coach at LSU, which I thought that, but I mean, his point was that, here you have this villain and you need that too if you want to really sell your sport. I think that kind of comes through, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and in some ways, people like, again, Gino, Pat Summitt, Muffet were willing to wear both hats at different times.
That's right. That's right.
Which is, because, I mean, I covered Cheney for 9 years. He didn't care which hat you put on. He's going to be himself.
That's true. Tell us about Dawn. I mean, I know you covered her extensively. I think at one point, didn't you write a piece where you thought she should be the next coach of the Sixers? I forget when that was. But tell us about Dawn.
I threw that out there. I mean, Dawn was not someone who was looking to be a coach. She was a pure player, and her story of how she got to Temple was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that she was still active in the WNBA. I mean, she did both for several seasons.
Mm-hmm.
She was up at the Final Four in Philly, and at the time, the athletic director of Temple was a guy named Dave O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
And he just called her up. He was looking for a coach, and he called her up, and she's like, okay. She showed up in like sweats, and she was not interested. And then she said, he said, let's go in this other room. And here was this whole search committee in this other room.
Mm-hmm.
And like ready to interview her. And she was like, not interested. And the story as she tells it, mm-hmm. He's like challenging her. You don't think you can coach college basketball? You don't think you're good enough? And it sort of got to her ego a little bit.
Interesting.
And that challenge worked. And she decided, I should do this. And she was somebody who, when she went off to play college basketball herself at Virginia, was sort of on the quiet side. I mean, here's think about somebody from North Philly, going to Charlottesville. It wasn't her world, and so she was not the Dawn Staley you think of now at all. She grew into that as a coach, even though, you know, a pure point guard, you know, carried the American flag at the Athens Olympics. I mean, she was, right. You know,
I forgot about that.
She was iconic in one of the iconic moments that I can remember. I really didn't cover her playing career other than was down in a couple of Rage games. She came in with the Olympic team, and I remember being at the Palestra. But one I did cover, and this was Mel's world, Mel Greenberg, you know, all over it all the time, you know. Nobody covered it more to this day still. Mm-hmm. But one thing I did cover was down at 8th and Market, Nike put up a mural of Dawn that mm-hmm. was like six stories high, something like that. And was one of those, you know, full building murals. And because there was a parking lot across the street from it, if you rolled down East Market Street from City Hall down toward the Delaware River, you saw it for like four blocks.
Wow.
And her own mother took the bus from North Philly. And I talked to her mother at the ceremony. She said, she was on the bus and she just saw it and she just started crying.
Oh.
And no one else on the bus knew why, but I mean, you can imagine a mother seeing that
That's really neat. I love that.
So she became this Philly figure, and I mean, I find it, I just sort of marvel that South Carolina just thought they were hiring, you know, a good coach and try to get in a tournament. And because, I mean, how many, there are not too many dynasties. I mean, Terry Out Stanford's done it, you know, Muffet and Notre Dame did it. Obviously, Pat and Gino did it. But to create something where they were, you know, undefeated last season LSU got Caitlin, Clark beat them. And here they are, you know, four starters gone or five. And here they are undefeated again. You know, they built this program that outdraws the men's program. And maybe it didn't this year because South Carolina men are very good, but mm-hmm. it has over these last 5 years. Just sort of fascinating, really.
I can't think of too many people talking about Staley. I can't think of too many people who are as good a coach as she was and also as good a player.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who were better players, and there are people who are better coaches, but are arguably better coaches. But both, might be in the top of the list.
I mean, you're talking Dan Gable, Iowa. Mm. I mean, that level, Olympic champion.
Mm-hmm.
She was like three Olympic gold medals as the point guard, had the ball in her hands. So that's, that group is so small. I mean, you can, you know, Lenny Wilkins, I believe, won an NBA championship as a coach, but did he win as a player?
I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
I mean, and Bird and Magic, you know, for all their greatness, it didn't translate on the coaching side. So you're 1,000%, you know, Bill Sharman.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Won championship. But he was just one of the group as a Celtic, obviously. So I don't think he's quite there on the player side. You know, if you want to say somebody who was better than Dawn as a player and as good as a coach, man, I remember. It's a really small group in this country.
Interesting. Yeah. It's interesting to me too. Just the whole women's bracket. LSU is actually in the same bracket as Iowa, so it's conceivable that Iowa doesn't get to the Final Four, which might not be great for the women's game if she doesn't get there, right?
Yeah, they're both not getting there. I mean, three because LSU didn't quite have that season this year,
right?
And I like this part of it. I covered it. It was like really the last event I really covered was going to Greenville last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that unlike the men that had, you know, the traditional four regionals,
mm-hmm.
After this weekend where there are home sites, it's only two sites. So they have double regionals. So in Albany, New York, if anyone wants to go to Albany, New York and pay a scalper or, you know, get online, you've got not just LSU and Iowa, theoretically, if they win two each, you got South Carolina also, and that so the whole eastern half of the country, and then the western half of the country is in Portland before the Final Four is in Cleveland this year. So it's not a bad investment in your hotel room anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, really. There you go. Well, who do you like in the men's tournament? Let's do that, a little bit of that stuff.
I'm the worst. I've already blown up my kids' brackets by giving them. They're like, they made the mistake of thinking that I knew what I was talking about, because the first year I gave them a bracket, two of my daughters won their office pools, and they thought, okay, Dad's got this. So every year I already have BYU, which just lost to Duquesne. I had them winning two. Boise State lost in the playing game. I had them winning two. So that said, I always pick Houston, and realizing that Houston probably doesn't have the offense to get at some point, you know, you need to be able to score 80 points as good as your defense is. But I still said, I don't care. I'm picking Houston again, because everyone's picking UConn, and they should, because they're the best team, but there's no value in that. So I still have UConn go to the Final Four. I still have Arizona go to the Final Four. I have Houston, but I picked Houston. Who did I pick? I picked Purdue. I'm so damn chalky. I mean, I'm chalky for the Final Four, because that's how it ends up being. That was last year. I take my shots. JMU winning a couple. I like everyone. It's almost chalky to pick McNeese to win. But I do. And I have Kansas losing, almost chalky to have Kansas losing to Samford. But I would like to see it, I guess. Not far now, just I would love to see McNeese play Stanford with a Sweet 16 bid on the line. Creighton's good enough because they have a rim protector in addition to...
I like them, too. Really, I like Creighton, too, a little bit,
Yeah, Baylor's a ball player, and the big guy, Ryan, can absolutely protect the rim. So we'll see on them. Marquette, without Kolick, was just another team. Now he's going to be back and should be good enough. Michigan State got through their first game, and, man, you know, you can... say, what are they doing in the tournament? They were 19-14 going in, but they could easily knock off North Carolina. It just wouldn't be a shock. So we'll see. College of Charleston, Alabama. That's a pretty good basketball game tomorrow.
Alabama can really score. Entertaining game. Well, I kind of did the same thing. I always put mine on ESPN's contest so it's easy to kind of tweet out and people see it. But I did the same thing you did. I picked Houston, and then I thought, do they have a guy who can go out and get 30 if they need it? I don't think they do. They're so good defensively, but I don't know. As soon as you pick it, as soon as you commit to the pick, you start thinking of reasons why to pick
it probably does. You probably are correct in deciding what the reasons are, but that said, you know, if UConn could do it back to back, be beyond impressive, and they absolutely could. I mean, they went out and Ken Spencer was a really good player at Rutgers, but he's perfect at UConn as well. So, when you can...
Yeah, they have the best team. I think they're the best team.
Right.
Well, who was the last back-to-back champion? I don't even remember.
Florida, I want to say.
Florida. Yeah. That sounds right,
and the difference between this team and that team essentially was a two-year team with all those guys. Noah Horner,
right?
Brewer, and so they had they kept NBA guys for two runs when this group, obviously Villanova won 2 and 3 years, but this is, so the big guy was the backup and was clearly going to be good. UConn now I'm talking about, Klinger. And
I like him.
Sure, absolutely. But I still don't look at them and say, you know, that there's an NBA all-star that you have to pick them. I respect them completely. I respect their defense. I respect how hard they play. I respect how well they play. But same as what Mike was saying, is there a guy that you know is going to carry them through? But the rest of college basketball doesn't have that. You know, you don't have, you know, Dwayne Wade carrying Marquette to a Final Four anymore. That's not the game anymore. So, which makes it, in some ways, more fun, but it doesn't make it better.
My personal opinion is that Purdue is the most vulnerable number one seed. They're number one in the Midwest just because of their history, you know, and, you know, as recently as last year when they lost to St. Peter's, despite the presence of Zach Edey. Well, what's your take on the Boilermakers?
I give them I go contrarian on that and say that they're going to be like UVA. UVA lost to UNBC and then came back and won the national championship.
Okay.
So everybody's off Purdue a little bit,
right,
for sound reasons. They're vulnerable. They can, you know, lose to, as UVA did, they can lose to a quick, fast team that can run circles around them, and that absolutely can happen. Let me just call up my little bracket here and see what their run is. So they've got Grambling, Utah State plays TCU. That can be interesting. And then they've got that Zags, McNeese, Kansas, Samford little bracket for a Sweet 16 team game. Could you know? So it's you know, they're not going to be handed anything. I mean, they should beat Grambling. They're supposed to be a 16 seed. I didn't watch the playing game last night to see whether Grambling. I was watching NIT. I hate watching NIT, but the Big Five teams were in it. So I was sort of interested to see what St. Joe's and Villanova were doing, and didn't see Grambling at all. But, you know, that's and then you've got down below, you've got South Carolina and Creighton and Texas and Tennessee. Can you possibly be shocked at any of those teams?
No.
You know,
yeah, I have Tennessee beating Purdue. I think they're pretty tough. I'm not sure I love Rick Barnes. I don't know, but as far as winning the whole thing, but I like their team.
No, and they've got a future pro, and you know, and sometimes you know Rick Barnes could be, you know, no one liked Gary Williams in the tournament until won it, you know, and Boeheim had that rap for years. So I try not to go too far on the jockeys, and the flip side is, oh, everyone's got to be, you know, on Bobby Knight until he didn't have players anymore. So it's still a horse, not the jockeys.
A little side note about that Midwest bracket. TCU includes Jameer Nelson Jr., a transfer.
Yeah, there you go. I forgot about that.
Some senior transfer from Delaware.
Bingo, third school. Yeah, that's exactly right. And got some NIL money, and there they are. And I was covering Jameer 2 years ago, Delaware Villanova game, obviously. And here he is. So, that's a good one.
So
how's the book going, Mike?
Yeah, there's a good one.
Yeah, it's moving. I mean, I've had a bunch of things going on that slowed me down. I had Paul Arizin chapter written. I've got a couple other chapters written that I'm happy with. I think I have a publisher that is telling me they're excited, and trying to get that to the finish line, and then we go from there. Right now, I'm going way back to the early part of the century, and that's my reporting focus right now. And then and then trying to figure out to get my arms around Wilt too.
Wow,
because you know, again, it's not. So the idea of the book is about Philadelphia basketball and the impact that the city and region have had on the sport. Mm-hmm. And that's the through line. So it's not. And what I decided on, you know, how do you deal with the pros? How do you deal with the Sixers, the Warriors? And I decided that, the dominance of Wilt and Harrison's jump shot, and, you know, those are from Philadelphia, but I decided that Doc, Moses Malone, even Billy Cunningham, Barkley, Iverson, Embiid, they are gifts to Philadelphia. They're not gifts from Philadelphia.
No.
So, you know, they're not my book. I'll have that sentence in there, but I'm not trying, and same thing, I'm not trying to write the history of the Big Five. Mm-hmm. I will write, I'm fairly certain there'll be a Jay Wright chapter. I am fairly certain there will be multiple John Chaney chapters. There'll be a Don Staley chapter, but it needs to be rooted in Philadelphia. That's the idea.
That's
so,
probably a good way to do it. Yeah.
So I'm having fun.
That's good.
I truly am.
That's good. I mean, if you're going to write about Wilt, that means you have to have a conversation with Wally Jones, which is never a bad thing, right?
1,000%. And he is up for that. Among other people. I just saw somebody who I knew him as Rasheed Brokenborough's high school coach, and I just saw on Facebook, he said, yeah, I played JV at Overbrook when Wilt was on varsity. I was like, oh, okay. I need to talk to you, Steve Kane, for sure. Because I'm still, Wilt's, to me, is the trickiest chapter because so much has been written about.
That's true.
So, yeah.
I'm sure. There will be more. I can confirm.
So, do you have a title?
That's a big thing. Say again.
Go ahead, Corey.
Oh, do you have a title or a release date?
Title, I mean, I'm still thinking, you know, and I'm new to this. You've done this a bunch of times, so I don't know, what the publisher thinks. I still have literally what I said, Philly Hoops is my thought, and then having, you know, the city's impact on the sport, how cities change the sport, we'll talk about it, and then I'm thinking that the cover should have Kobe's photo and Don Staley's photo and Jay Wright's photo and Wilt's photo, mm-hmm. and then we go from there. Release date, I'm still thinking. I am told that it will take a year from handing in a manuscript to a book being out. So I want this to be a 2-year project for me. So I sometime in the second half of 2025 is when I want to complete the project. And which means a year after that. So I'm off. Good thing it's history. But I'm also trying to. I mean, the reason I was at Drexel was, you know, one of their top scorer was, you know, has deep South Philly roots, where she learned the game from a rec center that I'm writing about going back a century. So I was like,
that's cool. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. So I also need to. Show, excuse me, you know, why so much of these players, why, you know, it's a tough city. It won't be just a rah-rah Philly book. There are some, obviously, many stories of people who literally didn't make it out.
Yeah, right. That's good. It's, I had occasion to speak with the elder Jameer Nelson today, and he mentioned that he was going to be heading out to Indianapolis for his son's game tomorrow night. But we were talking about where he came up in Chester. The 7th Street Playground was kind of the place to play, like the proving ground. And he was talking about the guys that he had to, you know, basically hurdle in order to be the guy. So that was an interesting conversation. So
yeah, and Philly is fascinating, that thing. So you have all these places around, and you had, you know, a South Philly version of that, a Southwest Philly version, a West Philly, a North Philly, a Northeast Philly. But then you had these towns that were just as tough places, you know. Mm-hmm. You had Chester, you had Norristown, you had Coatesville, mm-hmm. Pottstown to a certain extent. and also real proving grounds that real, not just good players, but tough players came out of those places.
Right, right. So his quote was, he had been like a baseball, football guy almost until he got to high school. And he said the reason he switched over to basketball solely was because his quote was, baseball got boring and football got real. Which I loved.
I do believe. Yeah, that's perfect.
So, okay. So that was an interesting conversation, because as you guys know, he's now the general manager for the Blue Coats, the Sixers G League team. So that was where the conversation started, and I just we went in other directions as will happen. So
as your hope happens,
as your hope happens, right? Exactly. So that was interesting. So Mike, I think Mike Gross has a game to cover. So as always, we appreciate your time. And I saw in the announcement of your award from the USBW, two things that I didn't know: that you're from Peekskill, New York, which is also the hometown of Elton Brand, and B, that you went to Vandy. If somehow I didn't know that you went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, both those things true. The Peekskill, sometimes they stump the panel on where I'm from, because I was actually born in Gloucester, Massachusetts, but I moved to New York, to Manhattan when I was two, and ended up, you know, I think where you consider yourself from is where you went. You know, I went fourth grade through high school in Peekskill, not Elton Brand's Peekskill High School. He would say, you're not Peekskill. He would say, because it was Peekskill Post Office, but I was the rival high school. Andrew Hudson Head. But yeah, no, right on the Hudson River. And I'm one of those Vandy guys too.
Okay, that's great. Well, Mike, we really appreciate the time, and we wish you the best with the book, and we hope we will speak with you again sometime when the book is closer to completion, or after completion for that matter. So we really appreciate it.
Would love to do that, and appreciate it, and I'm sure you'll see some good and fun and interesting hoops tonight, Mike. So Hershey's always I think it's as good as it gets in some ways for seeing the drama of
Groups. Mike's there for the weekend, so he's going to see it all.
I'm going to see the good end of it.
But anyway, that's how it's
going. All right,
thanks,
Mike.
Thanks, be well, take care. That was Mike Jensen, ladies and gentlemen. So Mike Gross, I know you're kind of up against it as far as the game goes, but there wasn't...
We got time here.
But one of the things we did want to talk about, I mean, I don't know if you wanted to expand any more on the tournament, which is just underway. To me, it almost feels like a North Carolina kind of year, just because.
Oh, really?
They missed the tournament completely last year, which is obviously a rarity. But they had, their chemistry was all messed up, and now I think it maybe the kid who transferred out to Arizona, that might have been one of those addition by subtraction situations.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe. They play both ends of the floor. They do play defense. I just don't love their team. I don't know. I've seen them so much. I don't love Duke or North Carolina.
No, definitely.
I don't know why, because I think the talent level is there, and it feels like a good mix of talent. I mean, that guard for North Carolina is a terrific player.
RJ Davis, you know?
Yeah, he's really good. But I don't know. I'm not feeling Duke or Carolina or really the ACC this year.
I agree. I mean, I guess the flip side of Carolina is sometimes they forget that Armando Bacot is on their team and he'll have like 10 shots, which doesn't seem possible. You know what I mean?
They do lose him. They do lose track of him. And also, if you watch them play NC State in the championship game of the ACC tournament, they had a hard time defending that big post player for NC State, even though their big kid, as you mentioned, is a pretty good defender a lot of the time. But they could not find an answer really for him. And NC State is not at the same level. It's not a championship level, I don't think, overall team. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't stun me if Carolina or Duke made a run, but I don't know. I just
I think Duke is still in a prove it stage under John Shire. You know, I think that's really, I mean, he seems like he's gotten guys in, and obviously they have a great recruiting class coming in next year. But
monstrous.
So, you know, I'm guessing that'll be, you know, definitely the prove it stage for John Shire about what his mettle is and whether he can take them, you know, back to where the program was under Krzyzewski. So that's interesting to me. But
yeah, and again, I think a lot of talent and a pretty good mix of talent.
Yeah, it seems like
their team. And you know, that's also true of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. I love their talent,
mm-hmm.
but somehow they can't defend, and somehow they're less than the sum of their parts for whatever reason. So those three, I don't know.
Here's my thought about that. You know, in the one-and-done era, when you get highly talented college teams like that, how much of a buy-in do they have when you really have to do the tough stuff, like guard people, you know, like make the extra pass? And I wonder if that's a product of that.
Yeah, that's fair. And that might be fair criticism of Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
especially the defensive part. But I don't see like a lack of effort or a lack of connectedness on these teams.
Mm-hmm.
I just for whatever reason, the sum is less than what seems like the parts. I don't know.
Which is always the interesting thing about basketball in general, as we've talked about before.
One of the things there's a mystery at the center of that just never ceases to be a factor. It never ceases to confound you a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Because I remember the was it the last time Duke won it? They made a change, a lineup change in mid-season, and they installed a guy named Brian Zubek, who was kind of an ordinary player, but he got I think it was 2010 actually, but he gave them something that they lacked. You know, he wasn't a great player, but he was like the right guy. You know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. That's a really good point, and he ended up being pretty effective in some key moments in that run.
Right.
That
so
they went on.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah. So that is. I mean, I think that's. We've talked about it before. Just how that is always interesting about basketball, since there are only five guys out there. How it has to be the right five guys at the right time. Now that means everything.
That whole thing of cohesiveness and chemistry, and I like the word connected in basketball. That's a really good word to describe it. Sometimes, even if everybody's trying to have that quality,
mm-hmm.
it's confounding. That's an interesting part of the game.
It's interesting that you mention that, because I wrote this story that actually you referenced on Twitter today about Lancaster Catholic's 1973-74 state championship game. And in the lead, I used the word connection. So it's interesting that you bring that up. So great minds, I guess, right?
Absolutely. Great minds. You know, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know, are any of those ladies going to be here tonight?
I suspect they will. There are four of them still live within the county. As I mentioned, Mimi Senkowski Griffin, who was the star of that team and later played Division I college ball, she lives in the Lehigh Valley, and her sister, who was also on that team, by the way, a sophomore on that team, she just died fairly soon, on March 12th. So that's a sad footnote to this whole thing. So I suspect she will not be there. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of the other women from that team are there, because they obviously have a great interest in it, and they are local. So that's kind of cool.
So. And Mimi is, she kind of runs a company that runs golf tournaments and other events.
Yeah, including the U.S. Open.
She had a big role in the senior open that was at Silicon Valley a couple of years ago.
That's her home course.
So I play golf with her.
Okay.
Come to think of it, that's the last time I played golf. It was a couple of years ago at Saucon Valley, which is a tremendous facility. And it was nice. And we were in the same cart, so we talked a little bit about hoops and about that team.
Mm-hmm.
And that coach, who I don't really have any memory of or any knowledge of, except that she was the coach of Lancaster County's first state basketball team.
Yeah, her name is Pat Wallace, the coach, and she just died on New Year's Eve, 2023, and she and everybody. I've spoken to everybody who was around that, and she's apparently she was really ahead of her time as far as a strategist and an innovator. And one of the interesting footnotes in the course of reporting the story, I came upon a story from the Intel back in 1974. She and three of her friends built a log cabin in the woods of Maine one summer. So she was obviously, she was all about the work ethic part of it too. So. Yes, indeed. But Mimi, that Saucon Valley is in fact her home course. She lives up in the Lehigh Valley. Yeah, so she's a really interesting person and a really lovely to talk to. Really bright and had a lot of great memories about that season. And so yeah.
At one point, was a color commentator for ESPN.
Correct. Correct. Yes, and yeah, ESPN and also CBS. So yeah, so she's had quite a career. I think I remember from talking to her that I think she's going to bow out of the promotions thing. She's been doing it for like 40 years. So,
yeah,
Yeah, certainly.
And she played at Pitt, right?
Yes, she played at, she started out at Delaware and then went to Pitt where her coach, Pat Wallace, was there briefly when she was there. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, so it was
so
really.
When is this going to be in the paper?
Sunday is the plan.
Okay.
Yeah, I just sent the final version today. So it was really great to speak with all those people. I mean, you know, it's a little challenging from the standpoint I never saw that team play, so that makes it a little challenging. But the folks that I spoke with, they're all so forthcoming and just so interesting in talking about that season and, you know, what it meant to them. Yeah, I mean, they're all great. So it was really, they had good memories and just a lot of fun stuff to talk about as far as that season, because it was, they went 27-0. They won their games by an average of 34 points. And I think I mentioned to you, there was one game in the state playoffs where they forced, depending on which news account you believe, either 47 or 49 turnovers, which doesn't even seem possible.
Yeah. If you watch a basketball game now, and it's a much different game, and a team commits 25 turnovers, it feels like they're just kicking the ball all over.
Yes.
I mean, I just watched the State A Boys Championship game where Berlin Brothers Valley had 20-some turnovers, and it seemed like they were just melting down.
Right.
And 48 is, or 47, 40, whatever,
Yeah, I couldn't even believe what I was reading, but both papers, the Intel and the New Era, had it like in the high 40s. I was like, is this? There you go. So and then they won the state championship game by 43 points.
And that, I believe, was after the Lancaster-Lebanon League was formed. But I believe that Lancaster Catholic still in the Central Penn Catholic League. Is that correct?
I don't know. I think it was before. Yeah. It was like their second year in the PIAA. I know that much. But, yeah, so.
Well, that might be the piece of it. Yeah. The PIAA was the. No, but the LL was 72. The LL was the same year as the PIAA network.
Okay, so, there you go. All right, so yeah.
But they weren't at the LL. I think they were still in that Central Penn Catholic.
Okay. I didn't come across that.
Bishop McDevitt and DeLone and Trinity and et cetera. Yeah.
So anyway, it was a fun story to report and write. Like I said, I was flying a little bit blind, never having seen them play. But you know, that's even there is something that's still ahead of my time. Believe it or not. Not much, but something. Before we sign off, did you want to mention this really odd story that has broken in the last couple of days about Shohei Ohtani and how his interpreter apparently used Shohei's money to place bets with an illegal bookmaker? And this is the focus of a federal investigation, and the Dodgers have fired the interpreter, obviously, but it just seems like one of those stories that, you know, there's going to be a next shoe to drop.
Yeah, because, I mean, from what I've read about this, it's sort of conflicting a little bit. Was he using Ohtani's money, or was he sort of on Ohtani's payroll?
Yeah.
And he's using money that was paid to him to be the interpreter. That is not clear.
Yeah.
And then I saw some reports that he actually was using Ohtani's money. Well, what does that mean? I'm not clear on that. And the other thing that is just an overarching piece of this is that there's going to be more stories like this.
Oh, yeah.
With legalized gambling and the role that this plays in sports in our time,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be more stories like this. It's sobering. And there is an organization, I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. I actually get emails from them sometimes. There's an organization that I think was created by the gambling industry, by the books and the casinos, that does security. Mm. Remember they called out a Temple game?
Yes.
A weird point
spread? Yes.
Yeah, that came from
Temple UAB.
This organization is pretty serious, and the gambling industry, it is absolutely, you can be as much of a conspiracy theorist as you want. It is in the best interest of the gambling industry that the games are not fixed, mm-hmm. that the games are clean. Mm-hmm. So there is this very serious security thing, and people who are fast and loose with this are going to get caught up in it. And it might be stars as big as Ohtani or even bigger.
Yeah, and there was one of the offshoots is, I forget which coach was doing a presser, a college coach, saying that his, was it J.B. Bickerstaff of the Cavs that's saying his family was the subject of threats because of whether the Cavaliers covered? I think it's J.B. Bickerstaff.
Another inevitable piece of this.
Yeah, for not covering...
Not just you didn't coach good enough, you didn't cover the threat.
Yeah, so, I mean, and because you can't swing a stick without, you know, hearing or seeing a commercial about one of these gambling things. It's so prevalent that there are a lot of offshoots of this. So,
and you can make 100 bets within a game, mm-hmm. while watching the game.
Yes.
In real time.
Yes.
That's the part.
Yeah.
I mean, at what point are we going to get to people are getting threats on Twitter because they missed a foul shot?
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. It's those micro bets. I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I heard something at one point about how you can even bet on like each inning in a baseball game or something like that.
Oh, my God.
I think I read that at some point.
Probably, sure. Yeah. Probably you can, yeah.
So this is really mushroomed, and there's a lot of unintended consequences of this thing being out in the open. Because, you know, if you remember, for a very long time, I think the NFL was not going to have a team in Las Vegas because of, you know, just the optics of it. And now, of course, that's gone by the wayside, and there's going to be a baseball team. There's already a hockey team there. So this is already, you know, there's no sticking that genie back in the bottle.
It doesn't necessarily have to be this awful thing. And again, the people who are really in this industry for real, the books, the casinos, they don't want it to be dirty. They want it to be clean, and they're serious about security. Mm-hmm. And that's where, if you're not meticulous about the way you handle this in your own life, if you're an athlete, a professional athlete, it could end up grabbing you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really concerning thing for sure, but we shall see how that proceeds anyway. But anyway, Mike, you do have a game to cover, so I'm glad we had...
The Steelers going for another state title.
Yeah, so we'll see how that...
I do like the Catholic team going for state title.
Yeah, and exactly. Well, what was the interesting thing to me was that this team back in 73-74, they played presses and traps, and that's kind of become just standard operating procedure at Catholic High since then. Like every coach, you know, Lamar Kaufman played that way. Charlie Detz plays that way. That's just the way they go about their business year in, year out for 50 years now. So
that's their trademark, and I didn't realize until we were talking about this story that it preceded Lamar.
Yeah,
obviously it did. Obviously, to a great extent.
Yeah, so that surprised me too. That even back then, I mean, and you know, when I talked to Pete Horn about that team, he said, "Well, you know, the skill level being what it was, you know, teams were really ill-equipped to handle it then, and they still are if you have the right athletes out there playing it. So
yeah, it's gradually gotten less so. It used to be, there was a time when I first started doing this, any girls basketball team that was good, a press was a major part of what they did.
Mm-hmm.
The skill level and the ball handling level, the athleticism to just be able to make plays against pressure and make plays at speed,
mm-hmm.
has gotten gradually better, and the press is not as much of an absolute requisite as it once was, but I still think it's a devastating weapon. And this team the Catholics playing tonight in an hour from now, they only have 8 players.
Wow.
And I really am expecting Catholic to turn it loose. I think Charlie's going to really turn it loose and try to wear them out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how it goes. I think this is a very winnable game for Lancaster Catholic, so we could get to write about a state champion, and frankly, you hope so at this stage.
Yeah.
It's a lot more fun to write about the winner than the loser.
That is fact. Yeah, well, I'm happy for Charlie. I hope it works out for him. Charlie's one of the good guys in the game for sure, so... You know,
yeah, and maybe we can get him on the show at some point.
There's a thought, Mike Gross. Like maybe next week, even. Maybe you can, if you think of it, maybe you mention that to him tonight.
I'll plan it on it. I might forget, but you know, I'm planning on it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Mike, I wish you well. Right.
Thanks, man. Congrats on the big award, my man.
Yeah, thanks so much. I appreciate that. So that's it for us, and we will talk to you again next week. I'm Gordy. That's Mike, and we'll see you soon.